little after 5 o'clock on the Fan, about 2.5 hours away from first pitch in the Bronx. The Yankees trying to take a commanding 2-0 series lead on the Cleveland Guardians. We'll check in on the lineup coming up in a few minutes, plus some interesting things coming out of last night, including Juan Soto doing something very mysterious with the Yankee bullpen that we will address. But it is Cinco time.
Cinco de Fivo with Evan and Tiki on the Fan.
Cinco de Fivo is brought to you by Helix Wireless, connecting everything, everywhere. And any Yankee fan in the car on the way to the stadium tonight, you potentially could see something really unique in recent Yankee history.
What's that?
The Yankees actually winning a game two of an ALCS. Shawnee did a little homework.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
I am here to give you the 5 last times the Yankees won a game two in an ALCS. And spoiler alert, every single one of these times, the Yankees did, in fact, make a World Series.
So basically, winning game two is the key.
For 4 of the 5.
Yeah, I was going to say, because off the top of my head, there's one that jumps out at me. And I think it's the year in which they definitely won game two, because they also win game one and they also won game three.
All right, we'll get to it.
And then they lost the series.
We'll get to it. But here we go.
Yes.
Here we go!
Number 5.
The fifth most recent time, the 2000 ALCS, the Yankees won game two. El Duque was dominant. He allowed just one run. Seattle starter John Halama, though, was better than El Duque. He blanked the Yankees. And then it was Arthur Rhodes who imploded as the Yankees scored 7 runs in the 8th inning, capped with a Derek Jeter homer, the only homer for the Yankees in that inning.
You had to say John Halama, didn't you?
Yes.
You know my history with John Halama?
You have a history with John Halama.
I do. I have a history with John Halama.
What is your history with John Halama?
So many years ago, I took my Twitter baseball team. You know, we played Twitter baseball for many, many years. It's still technically going on. And we challenged Boomer and Carton. You familiar with those guys?
Of course.
Obviously, Craig, no longer with us. Not that he's dead. He was my partner, and now he's with Fox, doing a great job on Breakfast Ball. And Boomer, of course, the highly popular Boomer and Geo program. So we challenged them to a baseball game. And they accepted. And it was for charity, and it was great. And Craig Carton, because I know this was him, this was not Boomer, decided we need to make sure we beat Evan and his Twitter ball geeks. So he brought in some ringers, including the starting pitcher, the newly retired John Halama.
Wow.
That some bitch threw 6 no-hit innings.
In softball? My God.
In baseball.
In baseball.
It wasn't softball.
Did they take him out after 6?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You know why?
Wait, how fast was he pitching?
I would say high 80s, low 90s. I'm like, he's pitching.
What?
That's why we couldn't hit him. The only reason we got base runners is because he walked a few guys. His control was off. My favorite part is one of my buddies, Dennis, was the umpire.
Okay.
He was the Twitter baseball umpire, so we allowed him to umpire this game. And John Halama was not happy that someone was called.
Oh, that's great.
And so Dennis is like, boy, Halama was staring me down. So, yeah, John Halama was a ringer in the big baseball game. I never faced John Halama. I never faced him. I came into the game late and faced Joe Tacopina, A-Rod's former agent, and I think Donald Trump's former agent. And then I also faced John Franco, who came into the game to close.
Nice.
I bunted on John Franco. He will not let me forget that.
What a day that must have been.
Right. Yeah. Anyhow, back to you.
All right. Here we go.
Number 4.
The fourth most recent Game 2 ALCS win for the Yankees happened in 2001, again versus the Mariners. The Yankees beat them 3-2. Mike Mussina was a stud. It was Scott Brosius who doubled in Tino and Posada in the second inning. Brosius came around to score on a knob-lock hit. Yankees scored 3 runs in that second. That's all Mussina needed. They held on to win 3-2 in 2001.
They won that series in 5. Remember, that was the Mariner team that won a 116 regular season games. And the Yankees beat him in 5.
And before 2022, that was the last playoff game played in Seattle. And here we go.
Number 3.
The third most recent time, the 2003 ALCS, the Yankees won 6-2 over the Red Sox to even the series at a game apiece. Andy Pettitte loaded the bases in the first inning of this game. Rodon-esque. Got out of it without allowing a run. Then the Yankees would take it to Derek Lowe, including a 2-run bomb off the bat of...
I don't remember.
Nick Johnson. Nick the Stick.
I got all those games in my scorebooks, too, by the way.
Yeah, how about
03 that? 03 and 04 was like prime Yankee Red Sox scoring. I loved it.
Well, let's get to the next one.
Yeah. Number 2.
The only time in recent history the Giants won game 2 of the ALCS, or the Yankees won game 2 of the ALCS and didn't make the World Series was this one, 2004. A pitcher's duel between
I guess I would go with Curt Schilling since he came back for Game 6. And not Kevin Brown because he sucked. Andy Pettitte. Andy Pettitte was gone by then. He wasn't on the 04 team. He actually left after 03.
Game 2, 2004, Pedro Martinez versus John Lieber.
Oh, wow.
Lieber pitched great that day. The game got decided finally in the sixth inning on a two-run home run for the Yankees by John Olerud.
John Olerud. That makes me sick.
What an ALCS. All right, last but not least.
Number one.
So tonight, something can happen for the first time since 2009. The last time the Yankees won a Game 2 of an ALCS. That night versus the Angels, the Yankees did it in 13 innings.
I was at that game, by the way. Didn't Sean Figgins make an error that helped the Yankees win?
That was huge. Yes, because that led to the walk-off in the 13th, which was the Melky Cabrera fielder's choice.
Yeah, that was it.
Yes, it was on that. Now, the Yankees gave up the lead in the 11th inning.
Mm-hmm.
And A-Rod
Brian Fuentes against Alex Rodriguez, and A-Rod hit a home run. I was A-Rod. At this game sitting in the press box with Sweeney Murdy. Yeah, that was a fun one.
That was the last time they won.
Game two of the ALCS. The last time
the Yankees won a World Series.
So tonight, Yankee fans, you can see something that hasn't been done since 2009.
Well, I'm thinking about this now. So they made the ALCS in 2010. They lost to the Texas Rangers that year in 5. Mm-hmm. I think they won game one and lost the next 4 games to Texas. Then they made the ALCS in 2012. That was the Derek Jeter gets hurt series where they lost game one. Jeter got hurt. I don't remember anything about the series other than getting swept and Jeter getting hurt. So they lost game two to Detroit at Yankee Stadium. Then you've got the 3 Astros series. 2017, they lost all the games in Houston. So they obviously lost game two. Mm-hmm. In 2019, they won game one. Masahiro Tanaka pitched a dandy and Boone pulled him early. And then they lost game two. The Astros evened it up.
Glaber was great that
night. And then 2022 is obviously a sweep. The Astros beat him in 4 straight. So, yeah, you're going back to 5 consecutive game two of the LCS losses.
Yeah. So let's go tonight. Enjoy the game, Yankee fans.
Crazy. How about that? Well, thank you, Sean. That was an interesting one. And you know,
informative one, John.
Yeah. He mentioned Andy Pettitte a lot. Andy Pettitte was like Mr. Game Two. And so here you have Gerrit Cole on the mound in this game two.
Yeah.
Trying to put the hammer down on this Cleveland Guardian team. And we know how good Gerrit Cole has been in the big spot. We know how good Gerrit Cole was in his last start against Kansas City. And a lot of pressure on a guy like Tanner Bibee. I think the Yankees match up very well with. The thing about the Yankees, they are very, very close to breaking out offensively.
Yeah, you feel it. You feel it even with Aaron Judge, even though he didn't have any hits last night. He did have the sacrifice fly, and his swing looks right. It's just not getting as deep as it should be. But Juan Soto, being Juan Soto, been the best player in the postseason for the Yankees, at least in this championship series so far, is why you have a guy like that and why you can't lose a guy like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are going to be moments, as we've seen, just historically in Aaron Judge's career, where he's just going to go flat for a little while.
And they're winning despite that.
They're winning despite of it, but they're winning it because you have a guy like Juan Soto.
Well, he's not the main guy, though.
He is a guy that consistently is getting hits.
He's off to a great start as a New York Yankee. Hit that home run through the wind in the third inning. But the guy is Sexy G. Mm. Sexy G,
no doubt,
continues to write the story of a Yankee legend. And as much as you guys may not want to accept him as a Yankee legend, because I don't know, maybe when you brought him over after the 2017 season, you had visions of MVPs and great regular season numbers. Sexy G. I call him Sexy G now. Do you like that nickname?
Yeah, but don't tell us we aren't accepting him over here. We've renamed the month, dude. Where have you been?
Jean-October?
No, it's Stantober now.
Oh, Stantober? I kind of like Jean-tober a little bit better.
Jean-tober?
Yeah, I like Jean-tober
better.
Then
you think you're talking about some French guy. Jean. Jean was in
left field. Stantober.
You like Stantober better?
Stantober's better.
All right, fine. Yeah, you win that.
Stantober.
Listen, Sean, I'm glad you're accepting him now. You're what we like to call a Johnny-come-lately.
No. I own his jersey.
You booed him on opening day in his first Yankee opening day.
Because he deserved to be booed on opening day opening day. And now he deserves to be cheered because he's mashing.
You're right. And if you ask Giancarlo today, he would say who's most responsible for your turnout. It would be Sean Morash opening day led the boos.
Look,
it taught me how to deal with negativity in New York, and I learned to ignore it and just accept it. And now I mash.
Here's the truth, though. He's always mashed in October.
Of course.
Like, this has been a thing since he first got here back in 2018. And what would give me hope if I'm a Yankee fan that my offense is about to explode is, number one, they continue to have these amazing at-bats where they're drawing walks, they're getting on base, and they're giving their offense a lot of opportunities to score. They're not breaking through. I mean, clearly, look at last night. You get two on in the first inning. They don't score. You look at that third inning after the Soto home run. They drew four walks and three wild pitches. That's how they scored runs.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. Score runs however the hell you can score them. But if you continue to give the Yankees opportunities, if you continue to put guys on base, eventually Aaron Judge will make you pay. Eventually Jazz Chisholm will make you pay. Eventually Austin Wells even will make you pay. And so that's the thing I'd feel good about if I'm a Yankee fan. While they're still lacking the big hit, they were 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position last night. If you continue to develop opportunities, which the Yankees have done a great job of doing with the quality of at-bats they're having, eventually you will break through and you won't need your bullpen to be perfect to win a baseball
game. Almost what makes you feel comfortable. And this is why I think people like Joe B. will say the Yankees have this easy path, because they're not playing championship-level baseball, but they're still winning. And so eventually you hope that it comes around when you need it most, that is in hopefully the rest of this series or the World Series, but they're not playing championship baseball for most of these games, but they're still winning these games.
Well, here's what I would kind of push back on championship baseball. You want a little comparison? You want a little history fun with New York Yankee fans?
You love history.
I think you'll love this history, too.
Go ahead.
In 1996, the New York Yankees won a World Series, and they broke their World Series drought. For them, not that long of a drought, between 78 and 96, but 18 years is a pretty good drought, which is what they're trying to do right now. They're trying to break a 14-year or 15-year drought. They did that. If I asked you, hey, Sean, define what made them unique in 1996, I'm going to answer it for you because I'm afraid you're not going to give me the answer I want, but you'll agree with it, was Mariano Rivera and John Wetland. That combo was unhittable. In fact, if you look at what they accomplished in that postseason and you compare it to the up to this point, like Mo and Wetland up until game two of the ALCS, if I gave you their numbers of what they did in the division series and what they did in the first game of the ALCS, and I put it side by side against the combo of Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver, what have I told you? It's exactly the same.
Is that so?
Because it is. In 1996, through the first game of the ALCS, because obviously there's a story to be written, Mariano Rivera, 6 2/3 innings, 3 hits, no runs. We'll use Clay Holmes as the Mariano example, because Clay's not the closer, neither was Mariano. I know that's weird, Tiki. You're like, what?
Right.
He actually wasn't that first year. Clay Holmes, 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs. John Wetland, the closer, to this point, 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs. Luke Weaver, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs. 12 combined scoreless innings from Weaver and Holmes. 11 2/3 scoreless innings from Mariano and John Wetland. So far, that combination, and the Yankees clearly have more than just that. Let's not ignore a guy like Tommy Canley.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, the two guys in that pen you trust the most are Luke Weaver and Clay Holmes.
Right.
They have been Mo and Wetland-like. So while, yeah, you're right, the Yankees haven't played their best in terms of clutch hitting.
Right.
Sure.
That's what I'm talking about.
Their bullpen is 96-like.
Right. Well, and if you get good starting pitching and then you get the great... I mean, the only thing you're worried about is putting up a couple of runs. And so they haven't needed to put up more than 2 or 3 runs.
Because their bullpen has been ridiculous.
Two-parter. Number one, the real answer to the Yankees is selflessness. You know, Lyric, Girardi, Cecil Fielder, Tino. You know, everybody had a role.
You don't
there.
Think of Wetland
Hayes,
and
Boggs. Mo? Of course I do. But, you know, the team is deep. Neither here nor there. Tonight, though, I think Booney could run into a little trouble that could hiccup the Yankees sweep.
Why? Because Luke bullpen. Weaver got 5 outs last night. You're concerned about him on a back-to-back?
Not only am I concerned, you started, he got out of it. Weaver lost the strike zone a little bit in that ninth inning last night, and I have to wonder if a guy who's full-fledged new to this closing role, a little too many times to the well, asking for multiple innings out of him, I would not go to that well at all tonight. He should not come in earlier than the ninth.
Well, the Yankees are going to have to battle with something that they didn't have to battle in the division series. Those off days were huge. Huge.
Yeah.
To where Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver have pitched in every single Yankee postseason game. They have not missed a game. And it was easy to do that because they went game, off day, game, off day, game, game, bunch of off days, game. So, like, it was easy to manage around it. There was only one back-to-back that they played. Now, there are off days in the LCS, as you know, but it's game, game, off day, game, 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 off day, game, game. It's a lot more intense than what we saw in the division series, and it does raise the question of how much can Clay and Luke Weaver give you, considering Boone's gone to them every single game?
Yeah, but I can't even say that they've geared up for this, because they haven't. They were in different roles before, you know, the postseason. So, emotionally, you'd think they're ready for it, but physically, are they ready for it? It's a big question mark, but I think you'll see it. I don't think Aaron Boone's going to shy away from using those guys simply because they haven't done it before. I mean, this is what you have to do at this stage of the season, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You got to go for the jugular, and you have an off day tomorrow.
Right.
So I would disagree with Sean. Like, I think the more difficulties could be in those three games in Cleveland, assuming they have to play all three games, mm-hmm. where you're going back to back to back. Like, tonight, knowing you have an off day tomorrow,
well,
I'm getting super aggressive with Luke Weaver, because I trust Luke Weaver more than any other bullpen arm in the entire postseason.
But I also think this is where you need the offense to truly come alive, so you don't have to worry about it.
Sure.
Also, Gerrit Cole could throw seven innings, and you go to Canely in the eighth and just get three from Weaver in the ninth. Like, length from Gerrit Cole affects everything tonight with the use of Weaver.
Well, but also what Tiki said. If they go out and score eight or nine runs and they break through tonight, and you don't have to use your high-leverage guys, that's a help, too.
Yeah, like,
that was one thing Cleveland did.
So Jake Cousins closed us down a piece.
That's one thing Cleveland did yesterday that was interesting. They lost the game, so they lost. I mean, that's not a good thing. But they were very careful to not show the New York Yankees their high-end relievers. And so they tried to stay in the game with Joey Cantillo and Pedro Avila and guys like that. And it didn't really work. It sort of worked, right? Because they did give up runs. But I think what Stephen Vogt was saying is, I don't want to give you any more information than you're going to get.
Smart.
Like, I don't. Yes, it'd be great to shut you down and keep the score close and keep it at three and keep it at four before it got to five. But I don't want to show you Cade Smith. Have you guys looked up Cade Smith? It's not Cade Smith. It's Cade Smith.
You need to work on your reliever. D's. You need to work on your D's.
So it's my fault?
Yeah.
Okay. Cade.
What's on D?
Well, I'm showing you the D.
Cade.
Cade. Is that better, T?
Smith. That's better.
Because they're confused with Cade Smith. Hmm. Cade.
I looked up Cade Smith, and there were several of them. How you doing?
Not the God Bless America one.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of Cade Smiths. You can get very confused with that list. Steve's in Bayside. What's up, Steve?
What's up, guys? You know, since we're going down memory lane with the Yankees and these all their playoff failures, fun little fact. Since 2009, mm-hmm. The Yankees are in the postseason in October, not including this year. The Yankees are 28-36 in October, which is over the course of a full season would be a 70-win pace. So, I mean, over the last 14 years, actually, not including this year, they have played basically like the Oakland Athletics the minute they hit October.
That's not a fair, by the way. I appreciate what you did with that. That's so not fair. I mean, because they get eliminated.
Right.
Like, you could do that with any team. What's the L.A. Dodgers postseason record, including their World Series year, really of the last 15 years? Of course it's under 500, because they're eventually losing a series and getting eliminated. The beautiful thing is that the past postseasons don't matter. They're irrelevant. They don't mean anything. So, yeah, I think as fans, we always have the memories of the past postseasons. Mm. But the reality is, it just doesn't mean anything. But I'll tell you what does mean something. This Juan Soto comment. All right. So last night, Juan Soto hit a home run in the third inning. He hit it through the wind. It was a bomb. You guys all saw it. We're all watching the game. Maybe you're at Yankee Stadium. And you notice that Juan Soto, and he's done this before. I don't think this is an original, has a hand signal that he puts up, you know, kind of like his hands like a heart almost. That's the way I would describe it. As he's rounding second base and he stares into right field. I even cut out a video of this so I could show Tiki and he can describe it to the audience. Oh, you saw it? So you don't even need the video?
Yeah, I saw it.
So Juan Soto, because I'll tell you, after these games, the media has hard-hitting questions.
Right.
They need to know. So here's the question to Juan Soto about what that hand signal is. And listen very carefully, because Juan Soto is very mysterious.
Let me ask you something real quick before you play that song.
Of course.
Do you think he did it or he was reacting?
What do you mean?
Do you think he was reacting to somebody?
Like his hand signal's a reaction to somebody?
Yeah. Go back and rewatch that real quickly.
Juan Soto's home run celebration.
Yes.
I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Watch when the ball lands.
Okay.
And then watch what happens in the bullpen.
Interesting. Well, here's what Juan Soto had to say about it. Listen to how mysterious he sounds.
On the home run trot, what was the significance between first and second when you made the hand motion?
We keep it in ourselves. It's only me and the bullpen. We keep it in ourselves.
Can you give us a hint of what it
means? No, I can't.
Wow. He can't. He's laughing. I can't. So my gut says sexual of nature. That's my gut feeling. Like, when I hear that kind of laugh, it's like, I can't tell you. There's kids in the audience. So to me, it's either something of a sexual nature or something about leaving as a free agent. Those are the only two things I could think of.
No.
No?
I think it's a inside thing probably about, I don't know, something you'd put in your sax underwear. Which...
That's what
I got out of that. Because if you go rewatch it,
yeah,
as I did this morning.
Yeah, you analyzed it.
After you were talking about it in our pre-show meeting, I had to analyze it. He doesn't do that originally. He's reacting. There's somebody standing on the hill in the bullpen. Ball obviously was a bomb.
Yeah.
Like to the roof, and it lands in the bullpen. And whoever is standing right there gives him that signal. And then he does it back to him. So it's a reaction, not he didn't initially do it himself. It was a reaction to whoever's standing in the bullpen.
Oh my God, was he getting tipped off?
Oh, you think they stole the sign?
You guys are all focused on something sexual. He's saying, I'll keep that between me and the bullpen. Is somebody out in the bullpen tipping him off? And that was his acknowledgement back, like, circle, we got it.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to be like a bad guy. But that's where my brain went.
That's not being a bad guy.
It's implying that they're...
No, hold on. Baseball has opened this up. And by the way, I don't care. Whatever gets on. They work for the Astros.
You shouldn't care, but coming from me, it sounds like I might be like trolling or whatever. So I'm glad Sean thought the same thing.
I'm just saying, like, we assume that's where our minds go in the gutter. But if he's saying, I'll keep that between me and the bullpen, and he's acknowledging them back, just saying.
Just telling you. Somebody's standing on that mound in the bullpen.
So you think that, let's say it's Jake Cousins, because I didn't see which reliever it was, or maybe it's Tim Hill, because that'd be funny. Tim Hill's on the hill. Like, you think that they're picking up signs?
I don't know what they're doing.
You think they're cheating?
I have no idea.
Is that what you're implying?
All I'm saying is that he's responding to someone doing it to him.
So the Yankees somehow got the signs on the Alex Cobb pitch, the 2-1 pitch. Juan knew what was coming. By the way, I have to admit this. I thought I was going to hate this about him because I hated him in Washington because he was such a great player. When Juan Soto dances to these balls, and I know he's been doing it all year, but I love it. I just can't get enough of Juan Soto. Like, here's my imitation. I'll stand up. So he takes his ball. He sticks his ass out. He shakes it, and he, like, death stares the pitcher like, yeah. Throw that to me again, baby. Like, Juan Soto is such a freaking joy to watch. He's been doing this all year, but the playoffs, it hits differently. It hits hard.
I hear you.
So your theory is, I got in the gutter. I was wrong to go in the gutter. They got a sign.
That is my theory.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Now, some are saying that he's been doing the same signal all year.
Well, that's what I was saying. He's been doing it a while. Like, I've seen him do it numerous times.
I guess I've just never noticed because I never cared about anything like that.
So maybe Juan Soto's getting the signs every time he hits a home run. Is that what you're saying, too?
Look, get him the real sign, which is him on the dotted line for the contract, huh?
No, no. And look, here's why no one should ever feel bad about that. And I don't think that's the case, by the way. I don't think they got the sign. I think it is something of the sexual nature.
But he's showing a circle.
It's a joke. It's probably just some fun joke between him and Tim Hill. It's okay. Like, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They could be talking about anything. I have no idea. Not my business. Juan wouldn't even reveal it. He got pressed on it. Can you give us a hint? And he starts laughing the way I laugh when Tiki tells me a sexual joke.
But you guys had, like, the sexualized thing. Look, if he's going for, like, male genitalia, he'd be terrible at Pictionary. I'm just saying.
Well, then it looks like a heart. It looks like a heart.
I guess.
I don't know, but it's like it's created. It's not. I don't know what the. I don't know.
I think I got it. Is Juan Soto single?
The fact that we don't know is a good thing.
Okay, I think he's single. I think he slept with one of the bullpen guy's sister, and I think that's his way of saying, you know, I love her, baby. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Where the hell does that come from?
Because I think Juan is, you know, he's a good-looking guy. He's having a good time. There's nothing wrong with it. And I bet you one night, let's just say, you want to go with Tim Hill? Hill brings his family out. They're having a good time. And Juan and Tim Hill's sister hit it off. They hook up. Tim Hill's like, bro, I don't know about this.
Wait a minute.
And Juan's like, nah, I love her. And he's got the hand signal.
You can't do that, though. So I'm the only one on the show here without a sister. Is that accurate? If I started sleeping with all your sisters, that'd be a problem for our locker room. Would it not be?
Not necessarily.
Tim Hill would know about this, though, based on your theory.
So I want to answer that question because I do have a sister. Now, my sister is married, so we have to go back like 15 years before she met my wonderful brother-in-law. All right? There are friends of mine where if they slept with my sister, I'd be like, that's great. Like, you're a good dude. I'm happy for you.
This definitely happened, by the way.
But no, it has not.
Okay.
That I'm aware of. That I'm aware of. And then there are other friends, and I'd just be like, are you kidding me? Like, for example, Tommy, I wouldn't like if you slept with my sister.
No, but I think you'd
I wouldn't be happy with that.
But I think you'd like it if, say, your good buddy Patrick slept with her.
Why would you say that?
I just thought of a guy. I'm being serious here.
What about Adam?
I think he's your only friend that actually could pull that off.
Because
he's like your one cool friend. That's a tough move to pull off the sister move.
First of all, he's insulting all of my other friends by saying they're all a bunch of losers.
No, but come on, you got to be suave.
He's just saying they don't have the game.
Exactly.
No,
and Patrick does.
Patrick, who's a good buddy of mine, I absolutely would have been okay if he slept with my sister. No, I think that's a great example. That's okay, a friend of mine where that. I would say, you know what, good. That's fine.
Okay, fine. So what you're saying, you'd hate it.
Now, I've
heard that before, by the way, from my friends.
I think Soto's a really good dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I really do. And so I think that to whatever bullpen guy's sister he slept with. By the way, I want to
acknowledgement.
If you're just tuning in, I'm making this all up. It's fan fiction. We're trying to figure out why Juan Soto has a kind of a heart signal when he hits a home run. So we're just playing games because Juan wouldn't play the clip one more time. Listen to how Juan Soto won't give us anything.
Won't tell us anything.
On the home run trot, what was the significance between first and second when you made the hand motion?
We keep it in ourselves. It's only me and the bullpen. We keep it in ourselves.
Can you give us a hint of what it means?
No, I can't.
Well, he says we, so it's got to be more than just one guy in the
bullpen. You're saying he slept with multiple sisters?
No. He slept with Tim Hill's sister, but Tim doesn't know, but everyone else in the bullpen does.
Oh.
So we're going to keep it between us, because Tim, who thinks he's in on it, we're doing this. Timmy, he slept with your sister. Bro, like, come on.
I feel so bad for Tim
Hill. And now he's skipping town after the season. I'm just kidding.
Why did we have to prick on Tim Hill? Should have picked on, like, Tommy Canely or something.
Right.
Oh, I know who. We should have picked on Tim Meisen. Who cares about Tim Meisen?
Or Luke Weaver, who would have fun with it. He's a funny guy. He would actually make jokes about that.
Luke Weaver's got a great personality.
Yeah, he'd be good with it.
Let's go to Leonard in Rockland County, New York. What's up, Leonard?
How you doing, Evan? Nice talking to you. How you doing, Tiki?
What's up, dude?
Good.
Yeah, so it's a Soto photo, guys. The joke's on you. And he's been doing it every home run the entire year.
Why would he? That's simple. Why would he not?
It doesn't make sense.
Why would he not tell the media that?
Yeah, like for him to laugh that way and respond that way. Because
I could agree that it's nothing. It's benign until he doesn't comment on it.
And I agree. He's been doing it all year. I've seen it a bunch of times, but. For him to, because this is the first time I've heard him asked about it. I haven't heard him being asked about it any other time, but that's the hard-hitting media of the American League Championship Series. Mm-hmm. Why is he laughing like he's a 12-year-old? Unless he's trying to throw us off the tracks.
He might be.
He's something else, that Juan Soto. We'll come back with more of your calls. We'll check in on the Yankee lineup as well, 888-808-1019. And Bill Belichick decides to take aim at the New York Jets. I want you to take a listen to this. I don't know if you guys heard this the other day, but Bill Belichick was on the Manning cast. He's on the Manning cast all the time now. And there are two clips we're going to play for you. Number one, he's going to defend Robert Saleh. And number two, he's just going to take aim at Woody Johnson. So let's start off with Bill Belichick defending the honor of Robert Saleh.
You know, Peyton, Eli, I'm not a big Jets fan, in case you don't know that. You know, like Fireman Ed, but that's it. But you know what? Coach Saleh did a good job with that program. I mean, he brought in a culture, a level of toughness and competitiveness. You know, unfortunately, the offense, you know, hasn't been what, you know, a lot of quarterbacks last year. And a little bit of a slow start, but I thought Coach Saleh really did a good job with this team. And, you know, they're probably not that far away from winning.
All right, I want to address this, Coach Belichick, because I have great respect for everything you've accomplished in life. His name is Saleh, not Saleh. Okay, so let's just, you know, let's be respectful. And let's learn the man's last name since you want to defend his honor. And number two, he didn't do a good job. He didn't. Now, if your argument is they shouldn't have fired him, they should have given him more time, or he's a class act, that's totally fine. They underachieved with him here. He changed the program. How the hell did he really change the program? They haven't been above 500 in over a decade. So I respect how a coach wants to stand up for another coach, but don't insult our intelligence. He did not do a good job. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean he deserved to be fired. I was sitting here on the radio saying I wouldn't have fired him. So we are on the same page in terms of if they should have fired him or not. But it bothers me, especially someone who admits he hates the Jets, lies to all of us by saying he did a good job. There's nobody who thinks he did a good job, coach. Nobody.
I think the one thing you'd point to is just the fierceness of the defense at times. And that's what he's talking about with culture. But at the end of the day, winning and losing, that's all that matters.
That's it, man.
And you cannot say someone's doing a good job unless they're winning. In professional sports, winning is the only thing that matters.
20-34 was his record.
Yeah.
He didn't do a good job, Bill, but he wasn't done yet. He then decided to take aim at Woody Johnson.
That's kind of what it's been there at the Jets. You know, barely won over 30% in the last 10 years, so... You know, the owner being the owner, just ready, fire, aim.
See, this is the part where I'm like, all right, Bill. Okay, bud. You're not wrong, sir. Though, he's sort of wrong. Because when he says get ready, fire, aim, I think what he's implying is that Woody Johnson is quick to fire a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, would you interpret that the same way?
No, it's just making a decision before looking at it. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Okay, so... I agree with the Robert Saleh firing that came from Woody Johnson, and I think that was an owner decision that kind of usurped the general manager
mm-hmm.
and did not come from the proper place.
Right. That's the one thing that bothers me about it, is that who did he consult with other than his brother?
I agree. I think that's a problem.
Right.
I agree. But Rex Ryan was here for 6 years and had three straight losing seasons before he fired him. Todd Bowles was here for 4 years and had three losing seasons before he decided to fire him. Adam Gase, you can't even blame him for because he wasn't even in this country. That was a Christopher Johnson production. So there are a lot of criticisms of Woody Johnson. I have plenty. We actually had a discussion about that earlier. You can rewind on the Odyssey app. I don't think, if that's what Bill was implying, that he's quick on the trigger to fire the head coach. I don't think that's an accurate description of Woody's issues.
I think he's talking about other things as well. And this is probably beyond our purview, things that have gone on at behind closed doors at owners' meetings, whatever it may be. And so I'm not pretending to know what Bill is talking about, but, I mean, he's Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And so he is speaking from a perspective of someone who's in the know. And a higher level than most of us are. That's all I'll say.
You know how...
Because I think that is the MO of Woody Johnson.
Okay, that's fair.
Around the league.
That is fair. And I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of the criticisms of Woody. But as I heard this clip, these clips, I thought to myself, what Ted DiBiase used to say, which was, everybody's got a price for the $1 million man. Ha, 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 ha. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If this goes bad for the New York Jets, and they end up firing everybody... They're going to need someone to fix the culture and cleanse this organization.
It's not going to be Bill Belichick.
Let me finish my question. How much money would it take?
No.
How much money would it take?
$15 million.
That's right. Okay, thank you for the answer. How much money would it take for Woody Johnson to buy Bill Belichick's love?
$15 million.
I agree with you, by the way.
Everyone has a price.
Basically, at the end of New England.
Yeah, I wrote that down as my number. I actually had 17 million because Bill Belichick hates Woody Johnson. It's very obvious with those clips. So all the ideas over the years of Bill coming to the Jets.
Hell, he basically said it to Eli and Peyton. You guys know I don't like the Jets.
Yeah, no, he admitted it. And he also admits that he thinks the owner's incompetent. For whatever his reasons are, that's what he believes. And I understand that. But everybody's got a price.
Mm-hmm.
So if things go badly... And you know the thing about billionaires? Billionaires don't like being told no.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like being told they can't buy that toy. It's like a kid. You take your kid to a toy store, and there's this really awesome toy, and you're like, I'll buy that toy for you. And then there's this really crappy toy, and you're like, I won't buy that for you. Mm. You know what your kid's going to do?
Right.
They're going to want the crappy toy because they can't have it. So if you're Woody Johnson, and he hears this, Bill hates me. Okay, he hates me. All right, that's fine. He's going to sit there and say, how much is it going to cost to buy him?
No chance.
To buy his love, to save the New York Jets.
We have football news locally.
More football news. So far today, the New York Jets have acquired Davante Adams. The Buffalo Bills acquired Amari Cooper.
I get the sense that this is not good news.
It's not good news.
Is it involving the Giants or the Jets?
Giants.
So we're talking about injury news.
Here we go. Andrew Thomas's foot injury. Paul Schwartz is the first to break this here from the New York Post. He got that MRI exam. He is officially seeking a second opinion from an outside medical source. Why? It is a Lisfranc injury, which is an injury to the bones or ligaments in or both in the middle part of the foot. Now, what's the deal with this? Surgery is sometimes required, which might be recommended here. If not, the recommendation is to wear a boot for several weeks or months as the required therapy. Andrew Thomas potentially could have the season over or at least multiple weeks missed. And right now they have one or two options. Either Josh Azudu will slide back to left tackle. He was the guy that got Daniel Jones basically killed last year.
Right.
Or they can move Jermaine Illuminor over from right tackle to left tackle and bring back Evan Neal to play right tackle.
Oh, my God.
Evan Neal played left tackle in college?
He did.
Imagine playing both. Evan Neal at left tackle. Huh. Imagine the answer to losing one of the best tackles in football and Andrew Thomas saying, hey, let's just play Evan Neal. By the way, stay tuned for Baseball Night in New York presented by Tri-State Cadillac. That's coming up next on SNY. Goodbye, SNY. That's freaking terrible news, though.
That's depressing,
yeah.
Is what it is. Because the offensive line had issues sometimes in the run game, even though they've been really good as of late. Part of that might be Tyrone Tracy as well. But still, the pass blocking had been so much significantly better than it was over the last decade, it feels like.
Yeah.
And now you have a massive hole you have to fill.
I mean, he's one of the best left tackles in football. He probably is the best left tackle in football if we were sitting there really analyzing it. And I think the short answer, if you're a Giant fan, if there are players, and you made a list, that you can't afford to lose, it's a debate, in my opinion, between Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas.
Yeah.
Those are the two options. Obviously, you don't want to lose Malik Nabers. You don't want to lose Kayvon Thibodeau.
Thomas is number one.
Over Dexie?
Yep, because of what's behind him. And Dexie's great. Dexie's more dominant and the better player. The player you cannot lose on this team under any circumstances is Andrew Thomas because of all the confidence he gives the quarterback.
I feel very bad for Andrew Thomas. I want to make that clear before I say what I'm about to say. Because I like Andrew Thomas. He's a hell of a player. It sounds like you're going to cry.
It's over, man. and this now from Rappaport 27 seconds ago. He's in Charlotte meeting with noted foot expert Robert Anderson. If it's surgery, which is likely or possible, it would be season ending. So, I mean, look, I want to beat the Eagles badly on Sunday. I'm not going to lie.
Are you really going to cry? I feel it coming, dude.
You know why? Because I saw hope for the first time, even if it wasn't wins or losses. The offensive line that we've been dying as fans to just see a team function behind, even if they lost games, the offensive line made it watchable. To lose the guy you can't afford to freaking lose and have to play Azudu or Neal at tackle, I just don't know how the offense, which was already struggling to score points, looks functionable. And to me, that's flushing another football season down the old toilet. It just is. It's going to look horrendous. I don't know how to describe it.
Can you pep him up, Tiki? He's about to cry, literally.
It's hard to pep him up because there isn't an obvious answer at left tackle right now. I mean, it's listed as Josh Azudu. Maybe it's Evan Neal and back at right tackle, but he's had so much failure at right tackle. And so I don't know how you trust any of that.
I would trade you guys Tyron Smith. Would you give me something back?
He might be Evan Neal, just 10 years older. At
this point. Wow. That's harsh.
At least he was good at one point in his career.
There's no other words. It just feels like the Giants are so close to being a good team. We keep talking about a quarterback way to lose this kind of piece. It's just in the middle of October, right. It's brutal.
I mean, obviously Evan Neal is going to get the first chance here. Because he's a first-round draft pick. And Josh Azudu, as much as he's has the label of tackle on his nameplate. Yeah. He's a guard. And so
Illuminor better than play left. I would disrupt two positions.
I would agree with you, but Evan Neal is a first-round draft pick.
Now, did you guys just call Justin Pugh? He's looking for a job. Mm-hmm. Seriously, he'll play.
God.
Remember when he played left tackle right off the couch?
Yeah, this is bad.
Justin Pugh, straight off the couch.
Yeah, that was very quick of you, by the way.
I'm going to also say this. If they lose Sunday to the Eagles, I don't want to hear anybody tormenting me when I want them to tank for a quarterback. Because
are you back to that already?
No, if they lose to the Eagles and they're 2-5 and Andrew Thomas is done for the year, I don't want to hear the, oh, come on, fight hard, win 6-7 games. No. Team's got to clean this up.
So I've gotten to know you now, Sean, for a year and a half. And the one thing I've realized about him is when something bad happens to one team, he starts connecting it to another team. Mm. So I'll take you all the way back to May. Or maybe it was June. I forget the exact moment.
It was June for the Rangers. Yeah.
The New York Rangers got knocked out. They lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. Don't worry. They were still the regular season champions. In fact, they have a banner hanging up at Madison Square Garden.
Which is beyond embarrassing.
More on that in the next couple of months when we've got time to talk about it. And Sean immediately, after the Rangers lost, said, "We're screwed. The Yankees are dead. We're not winning the World Series." Now, he eventually got out of that funk. But his initial reaction was to take the Ranger news and bring it with him to the New York Yankees. So I ask you, because Sean literally almost started crying, he's now rubbing his head like, I mean, I don't know what he's doing back there.
Because I care.
I know you care.
I live for these games once a week and just, it sucks, man.
By the way,
they were watchable, man.
Sean, I have great compassion for Andrew Thomas because he's a good dude. I have no compassion for you.
That's
the way you've treated me over the last few weeks.
And by the way, I deserve that. That's fine. But I'm owning that.
I appreciate that. So are you now down on the Yankees because of this Andrew Thomas news? That's the question.
I will regroup and I'll be fired up in an hour for Yankee baseball. I'm going to say this right now. I want this on the record. If you were to ask me gut feeling right now, seeing everything unfold, the Dodgers are your World Series champions this year.
Wow.
You have to understand the psychology of this, too.
And oh, by the way, the Lynx are going to beat the Liberty tomorrow.
No, they're not. So this is Sean's Super Bowl on Sunday. His whole journey here, as soon as Saquon, or Snaquan as he calls him, left, this was the date he circled on Sunday.
Yeah, I get that.
And Sean knows in the pit of his stomach, without Andrew Thomas, Daniel Jones is going to be in a hospital by the second quarter, and they're going to get embarrassed. And he's going to have to deal with that. He's going to the game. Am I right?
Is that what this is about?
So he doesn't have the fuel he needs to really...
This is the game I chose this year. I'm fired up to go. I really believed for the last 3 weeks the Giants are winning this game. And it sucked the joy out of going to this game.
Tiki, can you give him a pep talk? He's going to cry, man.
There's nothing to pep talk him about.
You can't even give him a pep talk.
Until I know what's happening, it's impossible to be optimistic about this issue. When you lose your left tackle, who is one of the best players in the game, that's one of the best players on your team, it's demoralizing. Okay. It'd be like losing Aaron Rodgers last year for the Jets, or I don't know, Patrick Mahomes. You lose a fantastic player. It's really hard to come back from that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give him the pep talk.
Go ahead.
You can't handle it, I will. Mm. Are you ready for this?
I'm just not in the mood to give him a pep talk.
No, he's like, I just want to see him suffer. Or actually, Tiki's down too.
Right.
He's upset about this. I'm going to give you a pep talk, all right? Sometimes the way to fire you up is to remind you about who you're playing. The Philadelphia Eagles are frauds with a capital F. Bryce Huff, and I feel bad ripping Bryce Huff. Bryce Huff is an abomination.
Yeah, wait till he faces Hizzoudou.
Okay, let me finish the pep talk before you attack it. Bryce Huff is collecting millions upon millions of dollars to do nothing. The head coach is under fire. Nick Sirianni. He's yelling at fans. He's using his children as human shields. Like, it is a bad scene in the city of Philadelphia. And you know Saquon. You know Saquon. He's dead to us. He can't handle this moment. Coming back. Hearing it from Giant fans. The Philadelphia Eagles, the frauds that they are. The Mets took care of business. Mm. The Knicks took care of business.
Sure did.
And this Sunday afternoon.
Talk to me, baby.
Even without Andrew Thomas, I promise you, I guarantee you, the New York Football Giants will not let our city down. They will not. If the Mets can beat the Phillies, if the Knicks can beat the Sixers, then I promise you, this fraud Eagle team, and they are frauds. We all know they're frauds. They will melt at the sight of the New York Football Giants. Sexy Dexy will lead us to the promised land. And maybe Malik Nabers won't go to a concert this week and he'll be good to go. I believe in the New York Giants. I will lead you. Just follow
me. You know what?
This
is sounding oddly familiar here. You had me up until you started using that type of verbiage.
All right. Either way, did I convince you?
I can't help but think who's playing tackle.
This sucks, man. You got your pound of flesh, and good for you at the Mets. You got your pound of flesh with the Knicks. This is my chance. I lost my pound of flesh, man.
It's going to be tough without AT. By the way, Evan, Tiki, and Sean are all wearing Giants blue today. Let's be positive here. You know what? Evan is right. The Eagles are frauds. They do stink.
Tommy, we all need to do something. It's very difficult for me to do this, too.
We're taking our pants off?
I'm shutting my mic off. Tiki's going to shut his mic off. Lugie's going to shut his mic off.
No, we're going to shut my mic off.
Sean, please take over the next 5 minutes. I want to see if he cries.
I'm not going to cry. I'm just saying.
I need to break. My voice hurts. Go ahead.
You don't understand. I have been rolled over and stabbed in my heart by this freaking Eagle team every year. And you guys got all revved up at the end of last year in Week 18. That meant nothing for the Giants. And changing the tides. I have circled this day, this Saquon coming in, fumbling a ball, something like that happening, and the Giants can't function and can't score at home to begin with. To do this, stop with the stupid gimmicks. Without Andrew Thomas this week, you got to go wave your pom-poms, hug each other, make out with each other over the Mets and Phillies, and send all the Philly people home. You got to wave bye-bye with the Knicks. And these dopes with their face painted and their Rocky music take over MetLife Stadium on Sunday. And I'm going to have to walk out of that freaking tin can once again with my tail between my legs without my pound of flesh. And it sucks and it's BS and I'm tired of it. Can anybody stay healthy on this stupid freaking team anymore? You're a Giant fan too. What are you doing, you loser?
Well, I have more faith in them
than
you do.
Have faith. Have faith. Daniel Jones' head is going to take it off on Sunday.
So Tommy DeVito will come in, and he will bring us a victory. He will finish the story. Started by the Knicks, continued by the Mets. The Giants will finish it. Bro, the Eagles with Saquon Barkley are not coming here and beating the Giants. They're not.
Guess what? Alternate spread. Lay 21 and a half.
21 and a half? It's the NFL. No one's winning by 22 points.
I feel so bad for Andrew Thomas, but I love drinking Sean's tears. It's such a weird thing.
Do you?
Yeah. And I like it. I like the Giants.
Maybe
I really care too much. It's just
maybe
him.
I care too much.
Yeah, I think so. I think you care too much. Can you just give me like one little... This sucks!
It just sucks!
Yeah. It sucks!
Oh. Guess I'm blacking out in the parking lot before this game.
Do you want me to take your tickets off your hand?
No.
I will buy your tickets from you, and I will go to Giants-Eagles. I will.
No, I can't.
Think about it, Teak. This is the perfect day. The Jets play at night. The Mets play at night. You know what? Screw it. I want your tickets. Because if you don't believe in the New York football Giants, I do. I'm going to MetLife.
He's still got to be there to see it.
First this.
Yankees baseball is on. WFAN, WFAN FM, WFAN HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
Now, I'm going with suite tickets with very important people, Evan. You can't be seen there, so that's not going to happen.
You're sitting in a suite?
Yeah, with my people, I can't. I don't trust you in that kind
of spot. Wow.
I'm a classy guy.
How many tickets do you have?
Two. Me and my dad's birthday present.
Really? Do you think your dad still wants to go?
Yeah, probably.
Jeez.
My dad put off knee surgery to go to this game.
Wow. All right, if you're just tuning in, Andrew Thomas is dealing with a major knee injury.
Foot injury.
Foot injury. Did I say knee injury?
Liz Frank
injury. Yep. How is that different from plantar fasciitis, by the way?
It's kind of the same.
Is it?
It's the extreme conclusion of plantar fasciitis.
Okay, gotcha. Because right now, like, for the reason I asked that is football reason and a baseball reason. So Eli, I remember, played with plantar fasciitis. Uh-huh. I remember he played almost a full season through it. And the Mets are currently dealing with Brandon Nimmo playing through plantar fasciitis, which you can see, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you see it. The way you mitigate it is by orthotics that lift your arch and protect you a little bit, get some extra cushioning in your shoe. I mean, I keep telling you this. Something's wrong with the shoes in the NFL.
You think this contributed to it too?
I don't know. There's too many foot, ankle, Achilles, calf injuries in the NFL.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with the shoes.
It is very concerning. We'll take your calls right up until Yankee pregame, which is coming up at 6:55, and we check in on why Aaron Boone took Anthony Rizzo out of the game early last night. Evan and Tiki here on The Fan.